This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Let's flip it. Same trial, different lens. The defense is arguing that Corey Richens is innocent, that she didn't poison her husband, that the investigation was botched from day one, and that the prosecution's star witness is a drug addict whose story keeps changing. They're hammering every crack in the foundation. Evidence that was never tested, evidence that was destroyed, evidence that was collected years too late, and a witness who admits she was high on meth during the entire time period she's describing. If you're looking for reasonable doubt, there's a lot to work with. So your questions is what we're taking in the comment section in our live right now. Be sure to drop them and also have grabbed a handful over the last week of what we've been seeing from the videos. This is from Brian in Salt Lake City. Carmen Lauber admitted on the stand that she tested positive for meth in late January to mid-February and early March 2022. That's the exact time frame she claims she was buying fentanyl for Corey. The defense asked if she was high the whole time, and she said, I guess so, yes. How do you trust a witness who is actively using during every event she's testifying about? Todd, you said you watched a lot of that. What was your take?
Well, and that, Brian, that was my question exactly. I mean, not only did she admit to that, but her recollection of the investigation and the conversation she had with police officials back 3-4 years ago didn't match up in her testimony with the prosecution. And when kind of drilled down on by the defense, she wasn't able to explain any of that kind of stuff away either. So not only do you have the fact that she admitted to using meth during this time period, there's a lot of confusion in her mind. And I can understand where she's at. It's tough to remember specific details this far away from the actual incident and activities. But it's really hard for me to sit here and say that there's anything coming out of her mouth that I find believable in any way, shape, or form at this point. And there's still, you know, as we're recording this, she's still on the stand. They're still drilling down on her. The defense is really going strong.
The fact that there doesn't seem to be any real dispute that drugs transferred from the guy to Carmen to Corey. That process, nobody's arguing about.
Right.
Like that something was transferred several times over. But if you really look at and what's really being argued here by the defense, and I think it's really just to create confusion, is the semantics of it and the name of what the product is. Yes, Eric died of a fentanyl overdose. And in the process of whatever was put into his drink, it was called propofol, it was called oxy, it was called fentanyl, it was called everything from all of these different people. I don't think any of them truly knew what the hell they were getting, other than Corey said, I want stronger stuff. And that's what they got. I don't think it matters, because I don't think Corey knew what the hell she was getting or why she was getting it, other than it was strong enough to kill him. Because she made the Michael Jackson stuff reference, which is propofol, which is not something she got. And it's administered completely differently. So I don't think it matters. I think at the end of the day, it's like, look, you kept asking for stronger shit. They kept upping it. What does it matter if it's rat poison or Pennzoil?
Sorry, that caught me off guard. I wasn't expecting you to say Pennzoil. And it was kind of funny yesterday, the defense, the lawyer for the defense who's doing this this witness testimony, was kind of arguing with Carmen about whether or not Blues, the name Blues on the street, actually meant fentanyl back in the day. And they're kind of going back and forth. And, and Robin in our chat actually made a very good point. The defense is kind of coming off as a bully here. And I have to agree with that. I will say that I don't trust Carmen's testimony at all, but the defense is really coming off as a bully. And I will tell you that just watching this trial and even her interaction with the judge at times, he's had a reprimand her a couple of times for kind of her take on things and some of the things that she said about the prosecution and all that kind of stuff. It's a very interesting dynamic in that courtroom. Actually, not one that I've seen in all the trials that I've been involved with covering on Hidden Killers. So this is the first time I've actually seen the judge kind of get really upset with somebody on the defense.
Well, what is your take on her as an attorney? I was taken aback immediately. It's interesting to me because everybody has different opinions. Bob the other day is like, she's doing great, and he's a defense attorney. I was like, this is like Phyllis from The Office if she had a sister that went to community college to be an attorney, and this is what you got. Seems like probably a lovely woman, probably very funny and has great stories, but not necessarily at once representing me on a murder case. She just seemed kind of clustery, kind of like, I don't know, didn't really quite have all the T's crossed and the I's dotted, or might have mixed up what to cross and dot. I don't know. That's been kind of my take.
Yeah, Kathy Nestor does not seem, and I'm not trying to rip on anybody, not the brightest bulb in the box of that team. Wendy Lewis is the one who's been actually asking the questions on the cross direct. Mm-hmm. On Carmen, and she's a bully, and she's the one who's kind of gotten some reprimand from the judge. Alexander Ramos is the other lawyer who's involved with that team. He seems to be pretty straight and narrow and kind of has his stuff together. But yeah, Nestor is a little different.
What about Bloodworth? What do you think of Bloodworth?
I really feel like he could have been like the cousin that showed up for three episodes of The Addams Family or something.
Like, I wouldn't say that he's very strong either as a choice. I mean, not necessarily as a choice, but in the courtroom. I'm not saying that he's necessarily the strongest one I've seen either.
But I would say this. I feel like they're all kind of in the same weight class, if you will. They're all kind of like, okay. Like, I don't feel like any of them are really outgunned by the other. I don't see one that's like, that's a damn good attorney. I feel like they're all like, they're okay. So I think that makes the playing field more level, because you don't have like a superstar over here that's just, you know, wiping the floor with everybody. Anyway, that's just my conjecture, my opinion. I don't know. I'm sure they're lovely people and they're doing the best to their ability. But yeah, I don't know.
Robin made a point about the judge. I think the judge has been very, very good in this trial. I'm kind of blown away by how good he is. But she said that judge, his Barry White voice, I could listen to him read the phone book. He's just very calm. And when things kind of go awry, he's just very even keel, very organized. I really like how he's presenting on the stand. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Grab that last, the DJ comment there. What is this? What do you make of her covered face and no eye contact on body cam footage? Isn't that deception? Mm. You know, a lot of that's not so much what got me. What got me most in the body cam footage was when they said in no uncertain terms that they're going to take him to do an autopsy.
Her response.
Because she was already kind of doing this. And then it's like, you know, because he's, you know, relatively healthy, young guy, he didn't say autopsy, but he alluded to it that, you know, they're going to go test and then see, you know, if there's anything else at play here, basically. And when that happened, then it was, why would you be reacting like that to that?
Right. If you really thought, if the loved one had passed away, again, take out of the situation that they obviously were having struggles. She didn't seem to care much for him, et cetera, et cetera. Wouldn't you just want to know what happened? Like,
of course.
And of course, please do an autopsy so we know what the hell went on here.
Yes. Like, let's figure this out. I wouldn't be throwing my head back and my hands in the air, like in defeat. Cause that's what that read like to me. Like, oh shit.
Yep.
Like now, like the jig's up. I mean, it wasn't for her, amazingly, because they didn't like there was no investigation. It seems initially that this was even a homicide because all the obvious things were never tested. But that that to me was really telling. If we're to look at the body language, that the rest of it, she's got reps at deceiving people. She's got reps at getting her way for her 30 some years of life and manipulating people. You can just tell. And she's good at it. And she's been able to do it. She's not good at it. She's not accustomed to being told no. She's not accustomed to people
seeing beyond her mask. And now she doesn't know how the hell to handle it because it's being called out left and right. So she's playing the Donna Adelson role of, you know, meek, meager. I'm just little me. At least that's my conjecture on it.
What do you think of I've seen some comments over the last week or so as we've covered this about the 911 call and the recording and how she presented on the call. What were your thoughts on that?
She didn't do horrible.
I didn't think it was I thought it was somewhat believable, more so than some of the 911 calls we've heard in trials in the past.
When you're looking, it's weird. Cause when you're looking for weird, you're going to find weird. If I were to say something that felt off to me was there seemed to be a sense of resignation in it and a sense of, in her voice, it's this kind of tone of, shit, I actually did it. Mm. I don't know. That's kind of what I got. It wasn't hysterical. You got a very different woman in that 911 call than you got on those body cameras.
Yes, absolutely. 100%.
And that's what, that's the incongruence. That's what Robin would point out. Robin will be here on Monday, by the way. I think is the incongruence in behavior. And that's something that doesn't line up. Cause you would think your hysterics would be, ongoing. You would be in the same state. You wouldn't be over here super calm. And then when people show up and the performance opens and the stage is set, now you're suddenly doing this. It doesn't add up. It's one's performative, one's not. It's like two different performances and testing the waters of seeing how is the audience reacting. I don't know, that's kind of how I took it. But yeah, but, I mean, again, everybody grieves differently, and that's the argument that it's going to be made. But I don't know. It did feel odd to me.
Yeah, I just thought the 911 call was, if it was performance, I thought it was one of the better performances that I've heard in covering these cases over the last year or so.
It is. We should do a countdown someday of the top 10 911 calls. We'll have Casey
and number five. Yeah, we could.
I'll bring
that.
Casey back from the grave we'll actually have him do it. That'd be great. And a long distance death dedication. We'll get in there. Lots of questions on this case, and we'll see where this goes. I'm very curious to see as to just how many holes they can poke into the prosecution's case and what will remain standing at the end of the day. Because there's just certain undeniable truths in this case. I don't care how many holes you poke into it, they're still going to be there.
Yeah,
her search history, her digital footprint, that's what's very damning. Everything else, shitty investigation. They should have tested this. They should have tested that. Yeah, they could have had a more of a slam dunk. I mean, there's also ways where this, I think, actually could have worked had Corey been a little smarter. If she did this and she wanted it to look more like an overdose, just leave some of those pills next to him.
You're right.
He did
You're
it.
Right.
End of story. Now they're missing. That's what makes it suspicious. That's what makes it more weird. Yeah, I mean, that's, there you go. Sad I have to tell you how to be a killer.
You're going to have a class now. You'll travel the country.
I'm a killer consultant. I've never killed, but I consult the killers. Consultant to the killers. Yeah.
And consultant spelled with a K, just so it goes with the killers. It'll be great.
yeah. All right. Well, your guys' thoughts in the comment section, leave them there. We'd love to hear them and see them. And yeah. We'll continue the conversation there. Next week, well, actually, depending on when you're listening to this, Robin Dreeke going to be joining us on Hidden Killers Live every single day, Monday through Friday. He's going to be our co-host going forward on Hidden Killers. So I'm really excited about that. So we'll have a lot of interesting conversation this coming week with Robin and all of our guests. All the guests are still here. Robin's going to be with us with all of them every week here on the channel. So be sure to join us Monday morning or every morning, really, Monday through Friday, 11 a.m. Central on YouTube, Facebook, and X for those conversations. And of course, the replays, we put them out for you
The channels. All right, we'll continue the conversation in the comments section. Press subscribe. Until then, for Todd, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.